Hey guys, it's me, Rob. Jeremy's taking some much-needed time off, so I'm doing extra solo this week. Before we get into it, I gotta say, it's been an amazing experience being on this side of the mic, and I hope you've been enjoying it too. Thanks to Jeremy, the folks on the Slack, and especially anyone who's taken a moment to share their feedback. This community is the best, and I'm grateful to be part of it. This week, my guest is W. David Marks, the Tokyo-based author who wrote Amatora, How Japan Saved American Style. If you haven't read it, you definitely should. It explains how a handful of people in Japan created their own take on iconic American clothing like jeans and Ivy style and exported it to the world. David is even more obsessed with the way culture works than I am, and is one of those guys who's able to connect the dots so vividly, you never see things the same way again. I figured he was the perfect person to chat with about Nigo becoming artistic director at Kenzo. We cover Nigo's history, how culture used to travel in pre-internet days, and part of David's own story, including how BAPE introduced him to the world of fashion, the time he got into trouble with Stash, and the clothes he saw in Nigo's private archive that you probably didn't even know existed. We go in deep, guys, so buckle up. All right. Okay, sweet. So you're back home, and last time we spoke, you had escaped Tokyo because of the Olympics, and I guess
heat.
Now there's a different Olympics. Oh, Heat Olympics, that's right. But you're back in Tokyo.
Yeah, I mean, I'm normally in Tokyo, so I'm in my study in Tokyo. It's very cold. It's like minus two or three. So was that like 27 outside? So.
Oh yeah. Oh wild. Yeah. Is that normal to get that cold?
Yeah, I think people think Tokyo is like New York latitude, or maybe they don't think about it, but it's basically the same as South Carolina. And in Japan, especially in Tokyo, believe that they have very unique weather, that there's four seasons, and that's a very unique Tokyo thing. But I'm from the south, and it's basically the same weather, which is very hot in the summer, and then winter it's cold without being like New York or Boston cold. So it does snow maybe once or twice a year, and but it's pretty pleasant, and it's just the blue skies. Winter here is just blue skies every day, to the degree it has not rained in a long time, and it's kind of worrying from a humidity point of view, but it's just quite crisp and nice every day.
That sounds pleasant.
Almost. Can't complain.
Except maybe the temperature part, depending, I guess, if you're not used to it, right?
You know, if you like clothes, which many of the listeners on this podcast do, winter is an opportunity. It's an opportunity for layering and tweed. And lots of things like that. So, you know, tweed season is quite limited as global warming increases. And so you only get about 2 or 3 months of those materials now.
Are you team tweed?
I mean, it's a great material. I think increasingly I'm not buying tweed because of its limited usage on our increasingly hot planet. So, I think, you know, for suits, it's like, cotton suits just work so much better, and Tokyo is so humid, and spring jackets or summer suits are kind of an oxymoron, and that it's just almost impossible. It doesn't matter what material you make a suit jacket out of for summer, it's just too hot to wear.
Yeah, I guess maybe linen. I don't, but linen's more like hot and dry, right?
Yeah, I think if you're in a hot, dry place, all this works really well, but in a incredibly humid and hot place. I'm from the south too. And then the south, it's like you're in your air conditioned house, and then you go out to your air conditioned car and you go to an air conditioned place, and you're not like walking around that much. But I think, you know, Tokyo, you've got to walk from your house to the train station, and you could be immaculate on your way out, and then you're just a sweaty mess by the time you get to the train station. So, you know, dressing up in summer is always quite a chore.
Wow. Yeah, that's I love outerwear. That's like my kryptonite. But yeah, actually what you've described is kind of the opposite for me. I drive from my garage to my work garage. So I don't actually get to put on like kind of all the layers, which is a little sad.
I mean, it also makes sense why Tokyo is such a fashion city, because you are out and about quite a bit, and people have cars, but they mostly use it for suburban errands or weekend drives. You know, it's not to drive into the city is quite a pain, and most people don't commute by car. I think, you know, even in Seoul, I know a lot of people who commute by car, but Tokyo is just not a city for that. And so you're on the subway and you're out, and you need the clothes for warmth or whatever, but also just it's a way to show off style at all time. It's a kind of a 24-hour style pageant here in Tokyo.
Got it. Yeah. That's I've only been there once. I just need to kind of get the energy to go back again. Obviously now it's a little tricky.
And the permission at this point. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But yeah, so actually, you know, talking about Tokyo style, you know, I have right next to me the Style Sample 2022 issue of Popeye magazine. And I kind of wanted to start off by talking about, you wrote a style essay for this.
Yep.
At least what it's being called, a style essay, which is a cool insert. And it's called Strategies for Style. So can you explain a little bit about what it is and how it came to be?
Sure. And I've worked with Popeye and Popeye's older brother magazine is Brutus for probably about 14 years now. And the original way that happened is, you know, I was in Tokyo and I was writing, but I wasn't writing that much for Japanese publications. And I was at this like opening for some United Arrows store and I didn't really know anybody. And I was just standing around and these two people came up to me and they're like, we're casting models for this photo shoot and we don't want them to look like models and you're perfect. Which was both like a nice invitation and kind of vaguely insulting. And so I was like, all right. And so it was this fashion shoot where it was called Suits in Mountains. And we had to hike up this entire like snowy mountain carrying like all these suits, like Dunhill suits and things, and then get dressed up on top of the mountain and do this shoot. And I realized that, you know, this was my chance to kind of get in with the Brutus people. And so the fashion editor at that time was Takahiro Kinoshita, who was the fashion editor at Brutus. And the stylist was Akio Hasegawa, who's now one of the big stylists. And so Kinoshita-san went on to be the editor-in-chief of Popeye and like kind of led the revival of Popeye. And so from his time at Brutus, I started writing kind of essays for them. And then when he moved to Popeye, I started writing essays once in a while. So for they did a Take Ivy issue, and I think I wrote something in that. And then they did their big Popeye anniversary issue. And I wrote an essay kind of like, what's the meaning of Popeye and why it mattered and all that. So, you know, once in a while, I kind of try to write something that falls in my wheelhouse. And I think what was weird with this is they were like, hey, we want you to do this essay on, you know, people who have good style and kind of what to learn from it. And I actually don't write a lot like that. And I don't love to tell people how to dress. And my interest in clothing is very much, to say it pretentiously, it's sociological, but it's like, I'm interested in why people dress certain ways. I'm interested in why styles emerge and why they change and how they are in reaction to each other and things like that. So I'm always trying to look at things from a third party historical perspective and not, you know, your shirt cuff should be one quarter inch outside of your suit cuff. There's lots of great people who do that and it's important. And I read that stuff and like it, but I'm just not one of those people. So when they asked me to do that, I was like, poof, like I do want to do this, but this is just not something I write. So, you know, the book I'm writing now, it's done, but it's going to come out in August, is called Status and Culture. And it's kind of trying to look at what are the general principles behind why culture changes, why it exists, what it does. And it looks from the frame of people looking for status. And in doing that, I kind of figured out there's logical reasons why we obsess over certain traits of people who have good taste. So things like following tradition, knowing how to follow tradition, authenticity, simplicity, you know, experimenting in ways that are quite interesting, originality, people who have uniforms, who have some sort of regularity. So I just kind of thought about what are those traits, and then I tried to find people who, you know, famous people who are great exemplars of that. And so that's kind of where the piece came from. And so instead of just simply saying like Jonah Hill wears this shirt and you should wear the shirt too, it's more like what makes Jonah Hill's style good. And I think for in his case, it's suitability, which is that, you know, people should wear clothes that match their identity and their existence, and that includes body size and persona and everything. And so I just try to think about those principles and then use people to highlight it. So that came out, and then Dick Carroll, who's a menswear illustrator in New York, ended up doing the illustrations, which was great. So it turned out I think good, and it was definitely within the realm of something I felt comfortable writing, but at the same time trying to be style advice of some kind, just more a little bit more abstract than very specific, your pants should be this length or width.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it came across as like more of an, to me, it came across as like an appreciation of these people and the style and sort of their approach. So, three of them, I think, were translated and put online.
Yeah.
So I'm going.
And I'd written it in English and then it got translated. Sometimes I have to translate it myself, and I just find that to be just like one of the, it's just really, really tedious process. So I just got a translator this time. But so the English existed and we just put three of them up. But yeah, I mean, I think all of them are great dressers. And I think all of the principles also are mutually exclusive in a sense that you can't have a uniform and also experiment in most cases. Obviously there are exceptions, but or you can't be a simple dresser, but also a really expressive dresser. So it's not necessarily saying these are the seven things you need to do to be a good dresser. It's just like, here are strategies that people use, right, yeah, and they work. You can pick two or three of them to do, but maybe it's impossible to do all seven. So because we just don't live in an age where there is one single idea of good taste. We do live in a really diverse era, which is wonderful. And I think when you look at people dressing well, they show that there is no formula. It's just kind of knowing some rules and knowing how to bend them. And so I think that's the main point I was trying to get across.
Right. Yeah. So which of those seven styles do you think is most closely aligned to like your personal style?
I think there's a little of me in all of them because that's why they resonated with me. I had Fran Lebowitz for the highlight of someone who wears a uniform. I don't wear a uniform and I don't like the idea of wearing a uniform, but at the same time, almost every single day I wear an Oxford cloth button down shirt, and my closet is just only Oxford cloth button down shirts in every possible color. So, there's parts of, you know, what I wear that are uniform. At the same time, I do like every year to get, you know, a couple things that are, that stretch, I think stretch me from how I like to dress to go to somewhere else. And then, simplicity, I think, is a general principle that I try to use. I'm 6'4" and I stick out anyway. And so it's like the more I can kind of reduce the attention to my existence as I walk down the street is probably better. So,
yeah, I mean, in Japan, I think a 6'4" guy is kind of like, I don't know how wide the range of diminishing your prominence is there.
It's not totally possible, but you know, wearing a hat doesn't help. Let's just say it that way. I don't need to be taller. I'm definitely the height in which if I'm in a grocery store and some child sees me, the child will exclaim, "That's a tall guy." And then that child will disappear and bring back their sibling to point out, amazing, like, you got to see how tall this guy is. So yeah, I don't need to wear incredibly bright pink madras and a giant hat, a big Arby's hat on top of my head or something.
Sure. Yeah. So at that height, do you have to can you find clothes that fit you in Japan? Cause I think of Japanese sizing as being sort of like one size down from American sizing.
Yeah, I think when things are really cropped, as they were in the kind of post-Tom Brown era, it was quite helpful because the pants didn't have to fit me perfectly. So if they were a little short, that was part of the charm. And now everything's really a big silhouette. And so that helps that they're making things a little bit oversized. But I mean, I think the main thing is Kamakura shirts will do order shirts that are exactly my size for $100 a shirt. And there's just so many opportunities to do made to measure from all the brands that I like. You know, Beams Plus does a sports coat made to measure every year. So I'd get those sports coats quite a bit. And I just ordered a suit from Taylor Cade, who's like the very American Madison Avenue tailor. So there's just a lot of tailoring opportunities, and there's a lot of not particularly expensive made to measure. You pay a little bit more than you would for, you know, the normal off the rack product. So from that perspective, I've kind of figured out how to dress myself with the brands I like. But I think it's sometimes hard. Like, you know, engineered garments may have a jacket and it just doesn't fit me. Whereas maybe their pants do for whatever reason. And then shoes are just impossible because I wear 13A.
Oh,
it's
wow.
I just can't buy shoes. I don't even try. So I went back to the US for Christmas, which was an ordeal. But half of that was just like, I just need shoes and I need to load up on some Nike sneakers while I'm there. And my Nike sneakers now, because Nike runs small, they're 14, which is just like,
ooh.
That's getting into the range of just like you're a basketball player or you are a freak. And so,
yeah, I was going to say, I think with Nike, the limited styles only come from like 8 to 13, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like if you wanted like Supreme Nikes, you're kind of out of luck. Yeah. Or need a connection or something.
Yeah. I gave up on those dreams a long time ago. So I just assume I'll take whatever I can get. I mean, I think Nike does tend to make their really classic basic styles.
Right. Yeah.
Up to 13 or 14. So, you know, if you want some Cortez or, you know, something pretty simple and New Balance fits, I don't know. I mean, I think everything about 13 you can get and it works. I've never had a problem. Adidas Originals, I used to buy a lot in the early 2000s when I was in New York and they always had a 13. So shoes in the US are fine. It's just that in Japan, you just can't get anything. It's great. There's great shoes here and there's great Japan only products and you just can't really get any of them.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what I just wish I had more time to shop there, really, just because the experience is like so different. And it's just like because I'm obviously Asian, I sort of, you know, am a medium there. And like, you know, my arms, if I have something American, usually the sleeves are like a little bit long. But like in Japan, it's like this magic place where like I'm normal. Everything about my body is normal. Like, no problem. I can just get whatever I want.
I also think if you're coming from the US right now, the prices aren't that high. I think people think about Japanese clothing as being very expensive. Mm. And if you buy it here, it's not. I mean, I think the issue is just once you ship it to the US, the prices get very inflated. And also to keep up with American inflation and American price levels, they tend to be pretty expensive. But the yen right now is what, 115 to a dollar? So if you think about, I always think about just like if something is 4,000 yen, it's $40, but it's actually at a 15% discount. So right. Things are, if you're buying in dollars and from the United States, it's not expensive. And when I moved here in 2003, there was still a sense that Tokyo was great, but it was a really pricey place to live. And then the economy is basically deflated ever since that time, whereas the US, everything's become more expensive. And so every time I go back, I'm always shocked about how expensive things are in the US, and especially like alcohol too. A bottle of Campari, this is like a very specific example, but a bottle of Campari in Tokyo is about $17 or $16. And when I was in Florida visiting my family, it was $45.
Wow.
So America's the expensive one now.
That's crazy. Because it is true, actually. People do think of Japanese. And I think it even goes beyond the fact that, you know, if you import something from Japan, you add the, you know, taxes and everything. And just if you see the original retail and do the conversion versus like the US price tag, it can be a bit of a sticker shock.
Absolutely.
And our retail models are so different. But I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty sure you could probably find somebody to like, they'll proxy you shoes and, you know, exchange for stuff you can send them from Japan.
Right.
I mean, do the Japanese people like use, like, if they're obsessed with like American brands that they can't get in Japan, do they, like, is this there an idea of like proxies in the way there are for American fans of Japanese brands?
I mean, parallel importing was huge when the yen was really strong. And the whole American casual boom of the 90s, late 80s and 90s, really started from
Want to hear the rest? Listen to the full episode and tons more exclusive episodes on Patreon. You can visit patreon.com/blammo. You also get access to our members-only Slack community, where we chat about clothes, watches, coffee machines. I mean, you name it. It's all there. So visit patreon.com/blammo, and we'll see you there.